So I would also like to add my warm welcome to all of you. And can I just check out in the beginning of the day, are any of you quite new to meditation practice and teaching? Yeah, it's good. I just need to have that orientation. And that program that's on the door, it's probably very elastic. It's probably not the program we'll actually do, but I just don't want to feel too tied to that schedule. So today I really want to focus on this quality of equanimity, which is certainly very central in all of Buddhist teaching as a liberating quality. But I suspect it's a quality that can feel very elusive, and yet it's probably deeply longed for. But first of all, just to set the context for the day, because there is something I think quite unique to doing a retreat like this in the midst of everybody's lives. You're not going away, you're not secluding yourself in a retreat center. So all of you probably are stepping out of a life that is full and probably fairly busy. So I would really just want to encourage you to do that quite consciously. That no matter how full or demanding or busy your life might be right now, to see whether it's really possible to make that transition to being here very wholeheartedly today, to commit yourself to this inwardly, to this day of mindfulness and silence. Really looking at what it can offer to us, the time to nurture our capacity for mindfulness, to balance. And certainly in Buddhist teaching, the Buddha very much mentioned that really all wise attention, all wise practice, all insight really follows on the heels of wise intention. To see that cultivation inwardly. And certainly in my experience, a day-long retreat requires as much intention as going on a year-long retreat. It is something to do with how we gather our minds, how we gather our focus, and create a dedicated space for ourselves. Not only this outwardly dedicated space, but an inwardly dedicated space. I think when we look back a little bit in our lives, we can see just how many lost moments there can be, how many moments that have been neglect or overlooked or even dismissed as being somehow unworthy of our attention. And it's very easy to forget that the very foundation of deepening and understanding, the very foundation of liberating our hearts, is to leave no moment unattended. To care very deeply for the quality of our heart, our mind, and our way of being present in the world, our way of being present with all of those who are in our world. There's a saying in the Tibetan tradition, it says, don't be tempted to think that these small moments of agitation or disconnection or forgetfulness do not matter, that it only takes a single spark to set a mountain on fire. And the same verse goes on to say, do not think that these small moments of attention and mindfulness and dedication make no difference, that the great oceans are filled drop by drop. So today I want to reflect on this quality of equanimity. You see it featuring through so much of Buddhist teaching. It's one of what are called the paramis, the perfections of heart. You see it as one of the deep absorption practices. It is one of the qualities in the Brahma Viharas, or the cultivation of the heart, along with kindness and compassion and appreciative joy. And it is said to be one of the qualities of heart that ennoble our lives, that bring nobility to our lives. In this teaching, equanimity is also used interchangeably with liberation or unshakable freedom of heart. And I want to read you just a little a verse from one of the Udana suttas in praise of equanimity. It says, "For one who clings, motion exists. For one who does not cling, there is no motion. Where no motion is, there is stillness. Where stillness is, there is no craving. Where no craving is, there is neither coming nor going. When no coming or going is, there is neither arising nor passing away. Where neither arising nor passing away is, there is this, neither this world nor a world beyond nor a state between. This verily is the end of suffering." It's quite a lofty definition of equanimity. But I think when the Buddha speaks about equanimity in this most deep, this most unshakable sense, it's not presented as some kind of lofty or unattainable ideal, but it is a fruition of a practice. It's a fruition of a path. Yesterday I spent the day in the afternoon in Cambridge, and I realized there's something incredibly appropriate about talking about equanimity at this time of year. There's probably always appropriate to talk about equanimity, but this time of year has a special way of being very unbalanced in some ways. I mean, you see the sort of gearing up of intensity when you walk down the street as this kind of movement. I mean, if some of you are students, it's a movement towards the end of your term. For those of you who are not, there comes at this time of year this kind of multiplicity of demands and expectations and needs to fill. I think what we see over and over in our lives, that our moods and our mental states and our emotions are very much tied to the events of our lives. We also see too that our responses to life, our responses to people, our responses to events and to ourselves, seems powerfully governed by how we feel about them. If someone or something makes us feel good, we feel happy. We want more. We want to stay close to. We want to preserve. We want to maintain. If something or someone apparently makes us feel bad, we find ourselves moving into these continuums of irritation, of aversion, of how to get rid of trying to create distance. And if something or someone basically seems to leave us untouched, we more or less just disconnect. We ignore them. We dismiss them. These are the essential pulls of our lives: towards things, away from things, disconnecting in the present. When we look at our mind in a single day, we see how those pulls, those tensions are operating. And we also see that is within these pulls of being for and against, wanting, not wanting, that these are the places where we most frequently get knocked off balance, where we can indeed find ourselves living in a state of almost perpetual motion. pursuing the pleasant, avoiding the unpleasant, and a little bit spacing out or disconnecting in the midst of the more neutral. Now, it is within this motion that indeed can be a kind of agitation. This is where we are invited to cultivate equanimity. This is where we are invited to cultivate that sense of inner poise. I think it is so important to recognize the relational quality of equanimity. It's not about pursuing some transcendent state somehow outside of our life experience. It's not another way of avoiding life experience. But it is learning that we can cultivate a very profound inner steadiness, not governed by the world of changing events. This is the invitation of this practice, it's the invitation of this teaching. Equanimity is equally really presented as being the very essence of the path of compassion, of developing inwardly the courage and the fearlessness that enables to open to suffering in our world, in those we love, in those we struggle with, to be able to open to the world, the realm of pain, without flinching. Deeply understanding that the balance of our hearts need not be governed by the endless stream of events of life. If we think of a single day in any of our lives, we get up in the morning, we breathe, there are tasks to attend to, there are sounds we like, sounds we don't like, we meet people we love, we meet people we struggle with, our body continues to surprise us with some new capacity for an ache or a pain, and old ones sometimes disappear. And when we look at the kind of journey of our mind, our heart in a single day, we can see we can visit heaven, we can visit hell realms, and we see all the things our mind can do. We can feel almost a little bit battered by this endless stream of events. We can feel almost a little bit battered by the uncertainty and the degree of change that permeates all experience. We can feel a little bit fearful at times of instability. There is something in this teaching, I think, which recognizes that in all of human history, no one has yet been successful in having only pleasant thoughts, feelings, sensations, people who love them and flatter them. And I feel pretty confident we will not be the first. So this is our challenge. This is our challenge, our invitation, not to turn away from this uncertain, this unpredictable life, but to turn towards it. In the Zen tradition, there's a definition of equanimity, which is to be equally near all things. In the Tibetan tradition, sometimes it's defined as being able to see with patience. To see with patience. Sometimes it's also translated as being able to stand amidst all things. Nagarjuna, one of the great poets of emptiness, he once said, "What do you do with a life that doesn't go away?" And I think what we see in this teaching, in this practice, is that our first step in what to do with this life is actually to stop wanting it to go away. To stop that kind of movement, to push away, to disconnect, to endlessly try and control and manipulate the fabric of our lives in that heroic endeavor to only have that which is pleasant and flattering and supportive and lovely. It is a full-time job, and it basically leaves us exhausted. It basically leaves us exhausted. When we can find the patience to see, that willingness to stand amidst, we can begin to see that the seeds of the liberated heart, the seeds of compassion, the seeds of equanimity, really lie within all of us, but lie within this very life, which at times can feel chaotic and disturbed. Because we see how almost counterintuitive or countercultural that can even feel, because we see how much conventionally in our life, if we feel no balance inwardly, what do? Well, very often those are the moments that we try to control the uncontrollable. If we feel unstable inwardly, no refuge inwardly, what do? We often try to create order in our life, to impose order, to impose habit upon a life which feels almost determined to defy those wishes for certainty. Sometimes in that lack of feeling unbalanced inwardly, we try desperately to fix things at times that cannot be repaired, to govern the ungovernable. This is actually a prescription for agitation. It's a prescription for anxiety. And this path is suggesting something different. Because I think it becomes evident to us that anxiety and aversion is pretty much a proximate cause for disconnection. Pretty much a proximate cause for disconnection and for the loss of equanimity. Now, if we see this in our life, there's a way of kind of coming upright and recognizing that the seeds of balance, the seeds of compassion, the seeds of patience really lie within our own hearts and await our cultivation of them. That the seeds of equanimity lie within uncertainty. Not seeing that the changing events in our lives do not always need to govern. The whole question, I think, in this teaching is, can we embrace the pleasant, all that is lovely in our life, without craving, without wanting it to stand still, without trying to keep and to hold? Can we embrace the unpleasant that will come in our lives, to our ears, to our eyes, to our minds, our bodies, without being shattered, without aversion? Can we learn to stay close to that which feels to be neither pleasant nor unpleasant? Now, this is actually a practice. You know, it's not as if we wake up in the morning and look in the mirror and somehow, by some magical accident, the face of the Buddha is staring back at us. You know, it is a practice, it is a cultivation to reclaim the unshakability of our own heart. I think it's not a stretch to say that the whole of this teaching is actually held within the understanding of equanimity. There's a very simple formula in Buddhist psychology that I want to offer for your reflection. And just to see whether that formula is one that you can see operating in your own experience. I'll give you the formula first, and then I'll describe it. Contact, feeling, craving, clinging, becoming. If suddenly we hear a siren outside the window, contact is the sound, the ear, and the hearing. With that contact, there comes a feeling. It might be an unpleasant feeling. If we're not very mindful in that moment, that unpleasant feeling gets overtaken by one of the core habitual tendencies, which is aversion. This is really the beginning of the agitation. This is disturbing me. This shouldn't be happening. You know, I'm looking for silence. This is an intrusion. With the thoughts feeding that underlying tendency of aversion, that contraction, that proliferation is leading to clinging, grasping. If that is unattended to, the next step is what is called becoming. I am so annoyed. I am so irritated. Contact, feeling, craving, aversion, clinging, becoming. Part of the kind of core psychology of how our minds move in relationship to the world. Understanding this formula is the key to developing equanimity. There is always going to be contact in our life. Sights and seeings, body and sensations, sounds and thoughts, all of this is smells, tastes. This is all part of our life. There's always going to be feeling. A sense of pleasantness within it, or unpleasantness within it, or neutral within it, not a problem. So where do we begin to get knocked off balance? It's in this next step of the craving, aversion, the disconnection. This is where agitation begins, this is where equanimity begins to disappear, and too often then we find ourselves lost in and locked in places far from where we wish to be. You know, I hate this, I want this. You know, this has to go away. This is a kind of formula that can really be traced within our own experience. I'm going to invite you today to actually start to trace this formula. Because it is within that very movement within our own consciousness, you know, a very familiar, knowable movement. This is where we learn to practice equanimity. This is where we learn to stand amidst all things, to be equally near the pleasant, to be equally near the unpleasant, to find that steadiness of heart where we are not governed by the uncontrollable events of our lives. And so much of the whole teaching of liberation really rests upon this. The Buddha encouraged us again and again to not allow events and conditions to be the gatekeepers of our freedom and happiness. That this is something that can be reclaimed and really discovered inwardly. This is so central, not only to equanimity, it is so central to the whole development of compassion, to allow us to be upright in the midst of our world that often has much that is lovely and often has so much that is painful. So, that's kind of my introduction to today. So, I would really